Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 105, and I am your host for this evening, Jason Love. Join me, as always, the illustrious Locke Vincent,
yes.
Master of the hand gestures. That's right.
That's all I got.
That's all you got. Mike Katsifrakis.
Howdy.
He's a surly mofo. And Nick Paleo. He's just pretty jolly. just look at him.
You can't see this. You can't see this on the fake radio, but he's wearing a penguin suit. So
he's the king of sending topless photos of himself to my wife.
Hey, I did ask permission.
You did, and you did copy me on them. Thank you.
Nice.
Very interesting. Anyways.
That's a totally different discussion.
About we'll
Nick.
Save that one for later.
Come on.
That's the after hours broadcast.
Nick's been doing that twerk sanity workout.
Yeah.
We'll get things started as usual with our what you've been playing. And Mr. Paleo, what have you been playing?
Bulk of my time was Bioshock Infinite. I blasted through that. Really enjoyed it. We talked about that enough, but yeah, good game. Definitely got to play it if you're a gamer. Fired up Battle Block Theater. Only played it single player, but I could watch that intro like 5 times. The intro to the game is freaking great. Guacamelee, I picked it up on my Vita. I've only played it maybe a half hour or an hour. Seems pretty solid.
Great.
I haven't actually gotten to the part where like you're phase shifting or whatever you want to call it between the worlds. So I think I'm right there where you pick up that ability. So it's still pretty early.
How are you like playing it on the Vita, on the handheld?
It's fine. I mean, I think that's the only way I've played it. Even when we were at PAX, I was playing it on the Vita. So I just don't. It's tough for me to get in front of the TV with the PS3 between the wife and the kid. So I figured I might as well just play it on there.
And plus, if you buy it on the Vita, it still gives you the PS3 version.
I did download it on the PS3 when I had fired it up, but I didn't get a chance to play it. So, and it seems like they actually like the PS3 version's surprisingly a lot bigger. Like, it seems like there's better textures and stuff in it. So, that's good to know. It's not just like a scaled up or down version.
You got to see those internet memes in the high def.
That's right.
And finally, the last thing I just started to play tonight was Dead Island Riptide. We got our review copies in, so diving
nice.
Back into that. You know, I can't, obviously there's like an embargo and stuff, but I forgot how much I like targeting damage on the zombies and stuff, breaking their bones, and I forgot some of the features the game has, so.
Do you play that with a mouse or a controller?
I'm playing it on 360, so a controller. And I actually like imported my character from the previous one. That was why I wanted it on 360.
Right.
So yeah, you can import your character and it keeps all your abilities unlocked and your level, and you know, it still does all the level scaling like the first one did. So it's pretty co-op friendly in that sense.
Did they have any is there a hook with this one? Any gimmicks, any huge features that they've talked about? Because I've totally gone blank on this game.
The only thing I remember, I haven't really played all that much attention to it, but the only thing I do remember is there's some strategy sections where like you have to defend an area, like you'll have to build up some like defense and stuff, and then there'll be like onslaughts of guys. Obviously, I've only played maybe an hour of that as well, so I haven't got to that. Just played the intro part, the prologue.
Interesting.
I've never
played a Dead Island game.
I was disappointed that there was no Sam B rap song playing over the opening of the game.
Oh man!
So,
did they have a suitably good opening theme song?
No, the opening was actually just a recap of the first game, like the story that happened with one of the characters telling it. So,
that's too bad. I probably listened to "Who Do You Voodoo" on repeat.
Thanks
for
go
like a
bump
solid
in the
week.
Night.
Yeah.
Things that go bump in the night. Who do you voodoo?
Yeah.
So lady person?
That's about it. I haven't really been playing.
So should I go back and play Dead Island? Or should I just jump straight
into
Riptide?
If you could,
do you want to rip through it on PC? Because that'd be fun. It's like $7.
Yeah.
I don't think out of all the random stuff I bought and forgot that I bought on Steam sales, I'm pretty sure I actually don't have Dead Island. I think we went through this.
And you're...
Nick and I were talking about this, I think, when that Steam, the thing that valued your Steam collection for you came out last week. I was looking, I was like, I got a $3,000 Steam collection, and I don't ever recall buying Batman Arkham City for my PC.
Because apparently you did.
When I played it on the 360, and it must have gone on a deep Steam sale at one point because it's there in my collection.
Can't have enough Batman.
You know, it's fun. But yeah, so I've always wanted to do Dead Island, but I feel it's one of those games that everyone hit at the same time and put it and just dropped it. So if I'd have to play it all on my own.
No, yeah, man, I'll take you through that prom.
Looks sad.
We can be our date.
Oh.
Let's do it. Next
get
Steam
the boutonniere
sale.
Near going.
Totally.
Under the Sea dance.
Well, it'll be like a zombie eye socket boutonniere or something like that.
Nice.
It's
something
your fitting. Cousin Marvin.
Something classy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Cool. So, anything else you've been playing, Nick, or that pretty much it?
Just been heads down in site coding stuff, so not too much
in the
way of gaming.
Some very exciting things coming soon.
Hopefully.
He's coding right now. all right. No. So, Mr. Locke Vincent, how about yourself? What you been playing?
Oh, much of the same. I've been playing Guacamelee, finished that for review. That's coming up on Wednesday. And
that seems like the game for you, by the way. Like when I saw that there was a 2D platformer with luchadors, I was like, Locke's going to buy about 10 copies of this game.
Yeah, initially the thing that drew me in was the luchadors and the art style. And I can't.
You and I played it together for the first time at PAX. They had that booth.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I think. And I mean, it's a super competent Metroidvania style game with the gear gating and it the writing is funny, it's witty, it's goofy, and surprisingly, I think one of the things to note is that the combat is deep enough that it doesn't get boring. There's combos you can do, and as you unlock and progress and gain different moves, different fighting moves, you can implement those into your battle. And later on in the game, certain enemies can only be defeated using a certain move. Like, you can see that he's colored yellow, so you'll have to use the headbutt to sort of break his shield, and then you can go to town on him. But, I mean, that game, it does an amazing job of making you explore and making it super easy to explore. You're not ever sort of, where do I go next? You always kind of want to just follow all the way to the path until you get to, you know, a red block that you can't get past, and you're like, okay, well, I'll come back later. And yeah, just it flat out says it's, you know, influenced itself after Metroid. And
I mean, you get your new abilities from Chozo statues, say those are my Chozo statues. Why are you breaking them?
Yeah, from a mystical goat. But yeah, make sure, you know, everyone should play Guacamelee. It's a very, very good game. And the co-op's really fun, too. It's you can play through the whole story with a friend, which is awesome, on local with either remote play with your Vita or just straight-up controllers on the PS3. You know, completely unnecessary, but it's nice that you can do that because it's fun. It's fun to explore and really is just... It's a really, really well-done game.
How does it handle all that, too? I mean, is there anything special, like you get some tag team power slam moves like in the screen split? How's the screen? Does the screen split at all?
It kind of zooms in. Each of the screens are just single, you know, panels, so you can see everything at once. It's not like Battle Block Theater where it like goes way back. Like, you are stuck to that one sort of single instance. And a lot of the times where you're doing fighting and stuff, you are locked into sort of a monster gate and you fight in there. So but yeah, try it out. I mean, it's cheap for PS Plus members. I think it's like $11 and it's only like 15, and yeah, well worth your time. It's a really good game. But review forthcoming.
One thing I really like about it, you know, you it's Metroidvania. It has the gear gating and all that. Something I really appreciate about it is its mini-map actually puts the color-coded blocks and stuff that gate everything. You don't have to actually sit there and backtrack to try and remember what was where. You can actually pop the mini-map and see exactly where you need to go.
Exactly, and the fast travel system is actually super handy because each of the, I guess you could call them dungeons or areas that kind of look the same and play the same. They each have a teleport statue that you can just go to, and it'll take you right there.
And plus you turn into a luchador chicken.
Yeah, you get to turn into a chicken, which is pretty cool because, I don't know, you can jump really high and peck at things.
You can actually fight things as a chicken.
You can fight.
It's also a great way to cheese the 300 combo.
Yeah, totally. You just ram on your chicken there. So yeah, lots of cockfighting in Guacamelee. I've also been playing Battle Block Theater, like Nick said. I played a bit of single player, and then I played a couple long sessions with Andrew, and that game's pretty fun. It's definitely different than Castle Crashers, which people are asking, like, well, I like Castle Crashers, so should I check this out? And I'm like, well, it's totally a different game. It's just the art style that's the same. And I mean, I think Battle Block, you know, it's a crazy platformer. I kind of relate it to Mario Party in a sense with all the different mini games, but when you're playing through the campaign, I'll call it, either solo or with a friend, you get some tough platforming in there, and
I enjoy that. Plus,
that's kind of the
vibe I got, like especially with like the brutal deaths and stuff.
Totally, and you're dying a lot. You're respawning really quickly, and respawns don't have any consequence, unless you're playing on the insanity mode. But really, it's meant to get that twitch and memorization and hit those beats, and the levels are pretty well designed. Like I found early on, you were doing a lot of sort of fast jumping and that sort of thing. And then later on, it kind of switched to more of a puzzle style where you had to set up these like Rube Goldberg machines where you had to like trigger an explosion and then it would open up this thing and one of your guys would pull it and that would set off this bridge and just these big elaborate puzzles that also required split section platforming. So, I mean, it's a platformer, so go in knowing that, but also go in knowing that it's like a really good game for like a party. If you like want to sit down and just have some fun with some friends, like it's a riot because it's bananas. Like there's a basketball mode. There's like, I think 8 different modes you can play in the arena and really good. And so far the support for user generated content is really good because they take everyone that uploads a playlist, which is 9 levels plus 3 insane levels and a boss run, and they curate it and then they'll put it as their featured level and you can play that. And I went in the first week, if you finished the featured play set or the playlist, you got a character, and there's like a ton of characters, but I was unable to finish the level because it was too hard. And I think that's a really cool thing that they're able to do that. Take, you know, someone meticulously just made this amazing set of 9 levels, and it's awesome. It's a really solid package. So also just rage inducing and hilarious at the same time.
Cool. Well, Mr. Mike, how about you?
Let's see. I also played a bunch of Guacamelee. I'm probably 4 hours into it. I think I have most of the abilities, I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. I really, half the fun of playing that game is just seeing all the stupid internet memes that are on all the signs in the background and all the other game references. Like, you know, there's a Have You Seen Me poster for Manny from Grim Fandango.
Yep.
In one of the cities, there's the TF2 spy with all the cigarettes in his mouth. It's Castle Crashers stuff. I think I saw a Commander video in there somewhere. It's just a lot of, you know, nice nods to other games and things. I've been playing a lot of Defiance because I actually have a review to, you know, finish writing tonight. And Defiance is a... If you don't know, it is the it's the MMO shooter that's a synergy with the sci-fi TV series of the same name.
Which is on, like, right now, I believe.
I believe it premieres tonight.
Who's going to watch it? I don't have sci-fi, so I'm leaving it up to you.
I've actually heard good things about it. They had a press preview of it last week, and I heard from a few people that had gone to it that it's surprisingly like high quality, big production values.
Andrew went to the event, the pre-launch event, and saw the episode there, and he didn't really say much to me about it, but it's both very frustrating and kind of amazing. And I think MMOs do this a lot where you can see what it does right, and it does... It's an MMO, like, exactly how you imagine one. There's mobs that leash and gain aggro on people and follow you everywhere in the world, and their AI is kind of shitty, as you'd expect. But it also has a pretty responsive shooting mechanic. Like, you know, there's nothing like in World of Warcraft type MMO where you start mashing that 2 button a lot, and then, you know, you might get, you know, caught up in a little bit of lag, and then everything that kind of snaps into place. Like, it feels like a mostly responsive shooter. I've had a couple instances of enemies getting weird, but you can play it really well, and the PC version anyway doesn't seem to have any issues with scaling to the numbers of players. One of the big Arcfall events that goes on, they're like the game's version of like a public event from, say, Guild Wars 2.
Right.
There were hundreds of players participating in this thing, and it scaled itself appropriately to the number of players, and the shooting mechanics remained solid. Like, you could still, like, you can dodge anything. Like, if an enemy's shooting at you, you can dodge, roll out of the way, hide behind cover, and it never feels like you're getting screwed by, like, lag warping that happens a lot in MMOs. It feels really great. But the problem is, with the exception of the story quests in the world, everything's the same. You know, in an MMO, you often run into, like, the FedEx quest where you take this item over there to that guy and turn it in, or you go kill 10 of these things. And there's a lot of that in, you know, even the best MMOs, but those games handle it by giving you a nice deal, like lore or something, like just detailed quest descriptions. And the main quests, with like the voice acting and stuff, and the stuff that ties to the game, has all that. But most of the quests are just copy and paste all throughout the world, and they don't even bother writing a new description for it, and they don't, you know, you just get like a canned piece of dialogue, like, the military can't afford to have this, so we need to let you do it, and we'll pay you. and it just...
Here is some money, go kill things. Thank you.
It really reeks of them spending all their dev time getting the actual world to work, and then running out of time to populate it with interesting things to do. So I feel like, and so there, it already feels a bit like there is a dearth of content, like, from the outset. And then the game has a $40 season pass it wants to sell you, like, right away. So they're like, we're going to have 5 DLCs that'll, you know, be little mini expansions. And it really, like, depending on when those come out, it can either feel like they just released an unfinished game, so the TV series could come out on time, or they cut a bunch of shit and they're going to sell you it later. And the game is also really full of rather expensive microtransactions, like, all the there's like lock boxes that you can purchase, and in most games, so in like Guild Wars, you can get like the keys that open the lock boxes. I think it's like they're like $1 each, or a dollar or a couple bucks, and you get like five of them. And in this game, like, a lot of the lockboxes cost like $3 to $5, and they're random what you get out of them. So it's not like I can say, so it'll be like there's tier 1 through 4, and each one says, so tier 1 says this has one item of at least uncommon rarity, and then tier 2 is 2 items of at least uncommon rarity, and tier 3 is 3, and tier 4 is 4. And you know, remember how Mass Effect did it with multiplayers? If you bought the super high tier one, you were guaranteed like an ultra rare or whatever the highest tier of gear was out of it, and then random for the rest of it. And this one is, it's expensive, and you just might get trash out of it. And there's a lot of, you know, there's like a lot of the player skins and stuff that you usually see in these things. So it has a lot of the really hardcore free-to-play hooks, but it's still a $60 game. And it's not like, Guild Wars pulled the same trick, but Guild Wars had all their microtransactions seem reasonable. Like, you don't ever need to do anything in the game this way, and Defiance seems to lock a lot of the good gear behind those lockboxes.
Well, you also don't have to pay for the Gears of War, the Guild Wars updates and expansions, right? Because they've already added
That's all free. It will, with Guild Wars, it'll work exactly like the first game did. They'll content update the game, the core game, until they have an expansion ready to go, and then they sell you the expansion for a price, then it just adds it to the game. And this, it just feels like there's not a whole lot to do. So I'll stick with it to see through what comes in the coming months, but right now it's really hard for me to recommend it for people.
How about like the gun mechanics? Like, have you gotten far enough in where you've been able to play with some of the guns that you can craft and do some really crazy things with them?
Well, I have, you know, I've had the ones that you can put mods into, and I've gotten some that have different, like, they take a cue out of Borderlands, and you know, there's like an elemental shotgun. Like, there's one that just flat out vaporizes guys when you shoot them with it. Great. And that stuff's cool, but you know, I spent 10 hours and I fought 3 different kinds of enemy. You know,
all right.
You know, there's a guy with a machine gun, the same guy holding a shotgun, and the same guy holding a sniper rifle, and then there's a
slightly bigger dude.
Well, then there's a chain gun wielding guy, who's, you know, kind of like a mutant from Fallout 3. And then there's just an array of bugs, and they're all like, it just doesn't feel like there's much variety. And you know, you're not gated. Like, I can go from the start zone and go all the way to where the end game stuff is, and the enemies don't actually get significantly tougher. So there's a lot there that feels unfinished, I guess I should say.
Lame.
Lame Zorus.
And then I guess the console versions are just flat out broken.
They were. I know they've got some more improvements and stuff to them, but yeah, they had some serious problems, and I guess they just gave away a bunch of stuff for people that had issues.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, I've been playing that, and then I played the Lord of the Rings Living Card Game. Which is co-op and is really awesome. You pair up with one other player, and you form an adventuring party, and you go do some questing in Middle Earth, fight against some scenarios. It's pretty awesome. Tally talked it up a whole bunch. She said it's actually what's been taking away all of her video game time.
Nice.
So just to go walk and throw a ring inside of all the camps.
Yeah,
done.
But it's fun if you like co-op board games. It's definitely near the top of the ones I've played.
And is it all card based?
It's all cards.
Okay.
Is it at all related to like the old? Was it the Coast released that? Like, I remember there was a card game way back in the middle 90s.
No, it's not related to that one at all.
Okay.
Oh, it's made by Fantasy Flight, so it's, you know, it's same group that you're going to talk about Netrunner, I think. So
yeah.
You know, it's the same group of same division of Fantasy Flight that did the Star Wars card game and
Podcasts.
There was a cat back there. No, is this so the Star Wars card game and Netrunner and I think game they have a Game of Thrones one as well.
Cool,
but it's fun. I like it.
Neat. Yeah, maybe we'll have to check that out. So I've been playing a lot of Guacamelee, which you've already covered. Played more Shattered Haven, which is still a game that I like and want to like more. And I just
it's still a game.
It's still a game that's not like other games that you play because it's an arson game. So of course it's not quite like anything else. And actually, we've got a Q&A that will go up with Chris Park from Arson Games this week. Well, it'll be a two-parter, actually, that covers A Valley Without Wind 2 and Shattered Haven.
Was I correct in my yes. assumption that it is, like, 80,000 words?
Not as much as it used to be, but
we
yeah.
We can actually release it on Kindle as a novel.
Yeah. not quite as much.
For that bad boy.
Yeah, not quite that much, but it's pretty good. Just the man has lots to say.
Yes, he does.
And, so, I mean, it's still a lot of fun. It's just one of those games that every time I start playing it by myself, I'm just like, I just feel like this is a drudgery. And then I start playing with someone else, and it's like a ton of fun. I start having, you know, really enjoying it again. But I still feel like something's just missing from that game. I don't know what it is yet, but it's just something that kind of keeps things fresh and exciting to it. But
just
it's,
wait for
you know,
Shattered Hammer.
Microtransactions.
Yes, I need $5 microtransactions to make my life complete.
I thought you were about to say you needed a $5 mic, and let's talk.
You're $3, let's be honest. Alright, so anyways, aside from that, to Netrunner, the card game, which is not co-op, but I've been getting to that, and that is a lot of fun, and it's also... I've been playing a lot of games lately that I've realized want me... that. Make me feel like I want more of it. So I start playing Netrunner, I'm just like, man, I feel like this should be a little bit more like Magic, or I feel like there should be a little bit more Magic element to this, because it's a lot of fun.
Richard Garfield designed it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And there's like some really cool mechanics to it. It seems really imbalanced in some ways. Like when you start off with the core set, the runners seem to have a real advantage over the corporations, and then you pick up some of the expansion packs and that seems to swing. So I mean, like, they try to balance it out with some of the expansions, but it's still a little bit getting
its
legs.
If you want the one that feels a lot like Magic, you should check the Star Wars one out. The mechanics are a little different, but it's like the phases of everything are basically the Magic phases,
and yeah,
it works. I love it. I think it's probably one of the best things I've ever seen come out of Fantasy Flight, to be perfectly frank. So,
and this includes their re-release of Talisman.
Yes.
Yes.
But Talisman's going to be my favorite thing. We have so much history with that game.
There's
so much nostalgia mixed in there.
Throwing that magic arrow. You don't need a bow after all, guy.
Oh, man. We should have a separate podcast to talk about our Talisman adventures.
Anyway,
I'll talk to you about that offline.
So Netrunner's a lot of fun, too. I mean, if you're looking for another card game, it takes a little bit to get into because the terminology is just... I don't know. They need to work a little bit some on their instructions.
Lord of the Rings one is the same way. It took me a couple turns before I actually figured out that the game is really simple. But
yeah.
The manual makes, like, there's like a 50-page manual to explain how to play it, and things that should be appearing in one section are not explained until, like, the appendix.
Yes. Yeah,
and
no, it's
like,
the exact same.
Like, dude, if this paragraph was right here, I would have not had to look at this book for 15 minutes.
And they call things like, you know, your hand, like the runner's hand is the grip, and this is the stack and the heap, and then over there it's the HQ and
you know,
the archives.
I hate
and the
that
R&D.
Shit. Just,
yeah.
You know, don't try and roleplay the game board. Just let the game world speak for itself.
And that's just it. Like, once it does, it really, like, you know, they've done a good job with it. So that's what we've been playing, a little bit of video games, a little bit of card games. And let's take a look at what's been going on in the news this week. Picking up with some Defiance, actually, we sort of talked about this a little bit, but Tryon, initially after the game came out, offered some week-long stat bonuses for people as a way to kind of make up for some of the problems that they had at launch. I mean, the servers, not everyone was able to get connected. We mentioned a little bit on the consoles there, people were having problems. Nick, you said you tried it out some, right, on the trying to get connected?
Yeah.
You get your very titillating Twitch live stream.
That's right. I live streamed the patch process and the install process.
Oh, it was best hour of my life.
And, yeah.
And then I popped it in probably a half dozen times over like the next week, and I would say I had one solid session during those times where I could actually I played more than like a half hour. Usually I would just basically it would either be like really really laggy to the point where like what you would do wouldn't be what happened in the game, or it would just drop you altogether and say it lost connection to the server. So, and I actually I had a hard lock in the game. It was the first time I got to an arc fall, and it was a huge thing going on there, and within 2 or 3 minutes I actually had the game hard locked. So I don't know, I did go back after that, and I had 2 or 3 times in a row where it was pretty solid. So
yeah, and the executive producer that they have there, Nathan Richardson, you know, basically got a quote from him saying that, you know, they want to do more than just addressing the issues with the servers and improving the client, which is some of what they've been working on. But talking about deploying patches, both free and paid, and downloadable content for that, which I think will be interesting based off of what Mike, you're saying is, if they patch in a lot of free content that actually fills the game out as opposed to making you go in there and pay for it.
Well, here's the thing, and I guess I probably should have elaborated on it. The quests that tie... There's quests in the game that tie into the episode of the show, and they exist only around the show, but I believe they get patched in as the season goes on. So right. I think that might be considered the free DLC...
I gotcha. Well, and there isn't that the whole thing too, like particularly active players in the game or something like that will end up getting written into the show or something like that. I thought they had some sort of promise tie-in back and forth.
Something like that. Andrew, which will be very Andrew interesting. Would be the one to ask for that stuff.
It'd be very interesting for XX Penis Lord XX.
Smoke Blunts 420 is taking the Northern Ridge.
I can't wait for Penis Lord to emerge as the victor in the Shadow Wars.
That's only right.
Is Cass in the show? Like, the actual actress?
I don't know about that, but Cass is in the game.
Well, I know.
She is.
She's the first person you see.
And the voice actress for her is god-awful.
Wonderful.
Actually, one of the worst things about the game is like there's really bad voice acting, and they do that thing that was popularized after Battlestar Galactica, where they make up their own swear words.
Frack.
Yeah. And the swear words that they made up are awful.
Like what?
They really are.
It's a steaming pile of shtako.
Or sh.
It's said, like, and that word is said, like, every third word out of Cass's Lordy. Mouth, and she's, like, your quest buddy for most of the story, and every time...
Go get me the shtakoing shtako over there in that big pile of shtako.
And I just sit there and say, how the hell do I mute, how do I mute this stuff?
How do you mute this shtako?
it's terrible. It's so bad. There's, like, there's no redeeming quality to it.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
The one thing I noticed when I played the beta was, I think, who is it, like your little ego or whatever it is that you have inside your head? Like, the voice actress changed at least 3 times.
That's consistent, at least in what I've played.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, for a while there, it was like, okay, now you're someone different.
It's pretty obvious to the first lady. That they really liked Halo, and they wanted you to have a Cortana.
Yeah.
Of course you need a Cortana.
Everybody needs a Cortana. All right, so in addition to speaking of DLC and Defiance, COD Blops 2 is coming up with their own DLC.
The Joey Uprising. Pants DLC.
What?
it is the official name of that, no
Why
matter what
Why is it called
else.
Joey Pants?
Because
Joey Pants is in it.
Yes!
I don't know
Joe
who that
Pantaleone.
Is. Oh.
he's, you know, Cypher in The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Joey Pants. Know,
Joey Pants.
The cop friend from Memento. Spoilers. So, the DLC
he
is going to offer...
one kill him. Oh, wait.
Wait, what? So sorry. Just like in COD Blops, where they had the, you know, Nazi zombies, and he went and took them out, doing a similar kind of idea
with
here.
JFK or whatever.
Yeah. They're doing a similar idea here with a mob theme to it called Mob of the Dead.
I forgot the president's one. I was thinking, when I wrote that article, I was thinking about the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar and...
and George Romero or
yeah,
whatever.
It was George Romero and... I don't even remember them now, but... Yeah, I forgot
Tom
about
Waits.
I forgot about the president's one.
I think that you know, joking aside, I think the zombie mode in Call of Duty is pretty ridiculous, but I actually think these DLCs are pretty inspired with using their weight as Call of Duty to just get really random people to be characters.
To do it, yeah.
I think it's real fun.
I'm surprised that they still haven't done this as a separate
James?
Thing.
They did it on iOS.
Yeah.
The iOS version is separate, but...
It just, I don't know, it seems like they could have a whole other audience of those people that don't want to pick up Black Ops, but they would definitely pick up this kind of a mode and this kind of a game.
Totally.
Yeah, but what they do is they hold off on this mode until you can conceivably get Black Ops on the cheap and then hook the people that way.
Yeah.
And it's a game that they sell, what, like 15, 20 million copies of it each time they throw one of these out there?
Yeah.
If they could get $60 out of you, they're going to try and get $60 out of you.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's Activision. I don't think they would bother releasing this as standalone, because they want to charge $15 for it anyway.
Yeah.
So, that update, where you can play as Joe Pantoliano, Joey Pants,
Ray Liotta.
Michael Madsen,
yes.
Ray Liotta,
yes.
The evil wizard from... Dungeon Siege.
Frig.
Oh, man, I forgot about
I might have to
that.
Get this.
That's the film credit you gave Ray Liotta?
That is the film credit I give to Ray Liotta.
Yeah, he Goodfellas was good, but I think that Dungeon Siege wrote a check that even a Scorsese flick can't cash.
That's right.
I don't know if you guys saw... I know I saw Dungeon Siege with Jason at a friend's place.
I watched it.
That was bad bad.
Yeah.
That was... Oh, my
there,
God.
There was not enough alcohol that day to make it good.
No. It was terrible.
And the last guy, Chaz Palminteri from The Usual Suspects. Another solid player. Anyways, they're all mobsters in Alcatraz trying to fight their way out from undead gangsters. I thought the interesting thing from the trailer was the use of traps and these other things that they kind of got. Looks a little bit interesting to... As opposed to just a straightforward third-person, first-person shooter.
So would they be taking on undead mooks?
No? Yes.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Okay.
All right, so... What else we got going on? That comes out, by the way, tomorrow from the recording of this, so Tuesday of this week. And this is the part of the podcast where I'm just going to... Tell the news and then be quiet and let the other people in the room talk. Dark Souls 2.
Back me up here.
Dark Souls 2 gameplay.
Dark Souls 2, yes.
Praise the mother. Son!
That's right, son. Yeah. Bro, do you even praise the son?
Bro, this guy doesn't even praise.
So, yeah, they released about 12 minutes of gameplay out of Dark Souls 2.
Yep. Yeah, they're doing their PR run and they're going through all the necessary venues and showing off it plays like Dark Souls, but they're showing off some
new
enemy
mechanics.
Types yeah new mechanics and that
new
sort
environments
of
new like I enjoyed
new ways
know, we,
to die.
One of the first things that you and I both commented on when we talked about it was it would be a Souls game without a bridge with a dragon on it.
Except there's like 50 dragons this time.
50 dragons and a haunted house at the other end.
Oh, that sounds great.
You know, stuff like being able to actually, you know, like, move and use your bow at the same time is a pretty, actually, enormous change if you think about how bows were used.
Yeah, they're doing some pretty smart stuff, especially just tightening everything up. You know, seeing what success they did with Dark Souls and just being able to take that gameplay and that structure and then just tighten it up. Like, yeah, just little things like that. And even they're showing off the light mechanic with the torch. Like, you can have a totally dark area and you have to use a torch, but that also means you don't get a shield. So it's kind of a...
It's like the Tomb of Giants, just interspersed randomly in your dungeons. I thought the idea...
Go ahead.
I thought the idea that they talked about having, like, the keystones, where there'd be... You'd have a key item that you could use to have a different effect in different areas you use it in the zones, but you have less of them than there are places to use it, so it becomes a strategic move, whether... You activate it in your zone or not, seem pretty awesome, and the ability to parry stuff out of swat stuff out of the air beyond arrows.
Yeah, so you don't get a troll axe to the face.
Troll axe to the face. Yeah, that was because you can parry arrows in Dark Souls, but you still take damage. In this one, it looks like you can actually just parry stuff completely.
They have mentioned also that the PC version will not be crap, which is nice. I wonder if they hired that guy who modded.
Yeah, I was gonna say the guy who made DS Fix is just part of the team now.
Yeah, and same with the guy who patched the online co-op to make it so you can summon your buddies. So
yeah,
who knows? They haven't talked about that at all. They're just sort of showing off mechanics and the look and the feel of the game, and you know.
I think that, like, the art style to me has always been really strong in that series. Yeah. It may not be the most technically...
It's
gritty. Nick says this shit looks like a PS2 game.
Yeah, totally.
But
it's
I feel like
grimy.
The art style has always been really, really strong. The areas all look really distinct, and you can kind of tell a lot about the world just from looking at it. And it looks like they've taken that big step further. Like,
yeah.
Something I simply appreciated that the guy that they were controlling in the demo had like a fur lined coat.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it tells you a little bit more about like where that game might take place in the grand scheme of this stuff.
Yeah, and I know we were just sort of talking and speculating and you know, theory crafting, but there's this feeling or something about sort of bridging the two games to the world, so might be circling back to stuff in Dark Souls or maybe even Demon Souls, you never know. But
do you guys think they're gonna have the actual like true ability to co-op in it, like without trying to game the system?
I think they will in this one.
I think they will have something resembling a more specific lobby, but I think part of the appeal of the reason the co-op in Dark Souls especially works the way it does is it wants you to the anonymity of your partner is actually a big part of the tone they're going for, like the element of the random, that you know you can bring someone to help you but they might help or hinder you depending and you know when you're playing in multiplayer you have people can invade you. And that's been a constant thread through both of these games. So if they flat out remove that in favor of a lobby, I think the people who really love the game are going to give them a lot of shit for it.
Right.
But I feel that they will make it more straightforward to play with who you want to, if not, you know, giving you a friends list.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think the theme, that weird isolation theme that persists through both of those games is too core to the series for them to completely throw away.
Yeah, it's a weird atmosphere because like there's barely any music and there's such an emphasis on sound and sound effects and design. Like that's what gets me about those games. It's just like
the sound design, the pinwheel fight is super short. If you've ever actually listened to the pinwheel music, like outside of it, like there's all kinds of like really fucked up like vocal samples that are being played with in there. It's real weird.
Oh man. So yeah, yeah, Look forward to Nick's going to be doing a Let's Play of that. Full playthrough.
I'll play it. I played Dark Souls. I put my seven hours in and got absolutely nothing out of it. But...
stream of Stockos from
That's
Nick.
That's right. Stockocast.
Well, Andrew Locke and I are going to be all over that game when it comes out, so you can certainly expect a bunch of discussion.
More right Tales from the Bonfire.
Yeah, they're keeping bonfires, so our little segment doesn't have to be renamed, Locke.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, so on from that little abyss of game, new Brawler that's coming out from Dinosaur Studio, which is an independent developer based out of Austin, Texas, Mech Knight Chronicles, which I guess they've subtitled Nightfall. They've got like a little bit of a gameplay trailer and some info out there. They gave to us a little pre-alpha build of the game that they were demoing at PAX East. Very, very much, I mean, like, from the moment I started playing it, I was reminded of Guardian Heroes.
I was going to say, I'm getting a Guardian Heroes vibe off of this.
And it's great. Like, that is, I mean, when you complete a level and you go and you have, like, invest points into the different things and you have like these 10 unlockable characters that eventually they're going to have. And I was just like, there is nothing wrong with me, like in my mind, of making another Guardian Heroes game. Code Princess or whatever that is, that was supposed to, you know, be built off the same guys and everything like that, had a lot of those feelings, but the arena build to it, like you just find these little areas as opposed to like the straight level progression. Kind of hurt that game for me. So I'm really looking forward to this and seeing what they do with it. The art style is kind of interesting to it, although I know it's too pretty early rough draft. They got a very cel-shaded kind of comic, almost Bastion style, I think, with the way that they're trying to go for a lot of it. So see more of that as it comes out. They got a Steam Greenlight page up right now. So I know one person was like, hey, this looks really great, and if it comes to the consoles, I'll be interested. They told me that if they get enough, you know, if they can get it onto Steam, then they'll be able to go to consoles. So if you really want to come to the consoles, go vote it up on Steam, even if you're not going to play it on PC, because, you know, that's the way these things work sometimes. Cheetah Speedy finally returns to SimCity.
Yay!
Anyone really excited about that? Happy?
I'll actually play it again now. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the answer you're looking for.
Play it again? Maybe. We'll see.
We'll see.
There's a new Civilization expansion coming out soon, so...
Oh... Yeah. There's where we're going to lose Nick for a long time. We'll have Tales from the Civ. Tales from Mesopotamia. And EA voted the worst company according to the Consumerist.
Is that 2 years in a row, baby?
2 years in a row.
Nice.
It's not even worth talking about how stupid that is.
It's pretty really outrageous. Amazing. It's pretty outrageous, yeah.
What's outrageous about it? That EA, that they got voted, or that yes. Sort of ranking exists?
Both.
Okay. That's all I needed to know.
But the fact that they got voted up pretty much just because, you know, the outpouring from the internet being the way it is, just the people who are going out there and they're voting and gunning for EA because they think it sends some kind of message. And Peter Moore's response to it all was rather... glib in some ways, and I mean, like, I understand where he was coming from, but it was also kind of a poor way to react to it. But he was right in saying one thing, which is, you know what, you should vote with your money as opposed to wasting time on these internet things. Fair point. Earth Defense Force 2025
EDF
shows the Fencer character.
Yeah.
That new trailer was awesome.
Oh, it was a really good trailer.
Japanese as hell.
Gun Samurai!
Hey, you can never go wrong with a Gun Samurai.
You're correct.
Poor Final Samurai Fantasy VIII gun. Proved that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, like, the only other Earth Defense Force game I played was like the very first one with Mike back on the 360, where it was local
2017.
Co-op. Yeah.
Yeah, we played the hell out of that game. That game is so terabad awesome. it's so much fun to play, but it is just it's like playing through someone's proof of concept and having it stretch out to 20 hours.
Thanks.
20, man. You could, if you played all the difficulty levels in that game, it's just
too much.
Kept on going. Oh. We did. I think Andrew and his wife
put like 60 some hours into the first one.
Jason and I played through the entire thing like 1.5 times before we said, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah.
and there were what, 4 achievements, and each one was for beating one of the difficulty levels.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you had to play the entire game on that difficulty level. If you switched it up, you didn't get the achievement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there was no like unlocking the lower level or anything like that. Yeah. It was.
Again, you could still take rockets and level buildings.
That's all you needed. And you were fighting aliens that look like giant ants. And you still are fighting, giant ant alien things from beyond the stars. So, but let's see, it's July this year for the Japan release, right?
Makes sense, right?
Yeah. And then no set release dates just yet for North America?
Don't think so.
Ah, so. Oh, well. Finally in our news, Borderlands 2 for the Mac now has co-op added to it.
So this is a specific Mac version, because the Steam version you could play on Mac had parity with everything else.
Yes.
The version
yes.
that you could buy out of the Mac App Store didn't have co-op.
And didn't have a lot of things.
It had a lot of stuff missing.
Like guns?
Yeah.
Yes.
All of the guns were actually gone.
It was weird because like your hands would shake like this, but nothing would happen in front of you.
Yeah, so. I was playing that Walking Dead FPS. Yeah. there's nothing there. No, but it was that version of the game. It could only co-op with people who had that version of the game.
Wonderful.
I believe was the restriction, and it didn't have any of the extra DLC. So They gave it Game Center and a whole bunch of stuff.
Hey.
And the DLC.
If you bought that version of the game, then
you deserve it.
If you game on the Mac and you don't have if you're a serious gamer and you have a Mac and you don't just download stuff off of Steam, then I don't even know what to tell you.
You deserve.
You
it.
Now have co-op and DLC for Borderlands 2. Welcome
for the GIMP version of Borderlands 2. Well done.
Welcome to 6 months ago for the rest of us.
Thanks, Asper Media. Thanks.
All right. So, that's a look at the news for the week, past week. Talk about our feature review discussion that's going on. And this week, franchises wearing themselves thin, and probably perhaps even with the new set of consoles coming around the corner, another point of conversation is how many of these are we going to see? Few examples, Gears of War, maybe Call of Duty, although there's a huge multiplayer aspect to that where it keeps staying afresh. But God of War games, I mean, there's more than that too, whatever you guys are thinking of.
I'd throw Halo out there. I would say...
Shots fired.
I love Halo. I love those games. And I just... There were 4 Halo games on the 360.
Four main Halo games, right? Plus ODST, Reach, and Halo Wars.
Anniversary Edition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's just... It just hit, like... Like, Anniversary Edition is what really started, hitting it for me. Because, I played the crap out of Reach. Played the crap out of ODST, Halo 3. And, Anniversary Edition, I couldn't... Like, I started feeling fatigued playing it. It's like, I remember loving the crap out of Halo back in the day, and they did a pretty good job updating it. And I just put it down, and to this day, I haven't finished Halo 4. Oof. That's a game that I was super amped for, and I think Nick played the last time I played it was when I played co-op with Nick, and I think we were about little more than halfway through it, and I just couldn't bring myself to go back. And, you know, I was starting to think, you know, a lot of people talking about feeling that way with Gears of War Judgment, that, you know, people who would otherwise be totally pumped for that game just saying, I don't know, I don't really need to play another one of these right now.
I fall right into that category, man. Like, I love Gears. I get psyched for Gears. I've bought every single Gears on release date, special editions and stuff like that. I've played hundreds of hours of that franchise, and then when Judgment was announced and, of course, released, I was just like, even my friends were playing it. I was like, I don't know. There's other stuff to play.
I didn't even have that many friends playing it. Like,
yeah. Not the same sort of zeitgeist as, like, 2 or 3. Like, not even close. So, and the same thing happened with God of War. Like, I really enjoy the God of War games. Like, 1, 2, and 3 were awesome. PSP mm-hmm. ones were fine, whatever. But, I mean, the main franchise ones were really good. And, you know, I was fine with 3, where it left off, where it's done. I was like, okay, that's cool. It's done. And then, what's the new one? Ascension?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, could not care less about that. Even, and like, I'm sure if I played it, it'd be a fine game. I would enjoy it. But I just don't need more Kratos. I don't need more, you know, whipping chains, you know, blade chains.
A big part of what's happening with, especially the franchises we've talked about, is the need for everybody to envision their franchise as a trilogy.
Right.
All these games had a trilogy that capped off, and then there was enough time between the last game in the trilogy and the next console generation that they felt that they needed to remind everybody that this franchise is there. And it's why you get, you know, a Gears of War prequel starring Baird, because... Yeah. You know,
the annualization is just, it's gone over. When they announced the new Batman game this week.
Yeah.
That was surprising, hey?
That was a huge shock, too, because they took it away from Rocksteady.
Well, no, yeah, Rocksteady is probably working on, because they talked about that Silver Age Batman that wasn't what just got announced. I bet that Batman game that Rocksteady's working on is next gen, and they're just trying to fill a gap.
You can't feasibly release a game every year, like, unless you're, and even then, like, you look at, like, the games that do that, and it is the same studio, and you look at, it's sports games, and there's just so much asset reuse and something like that, that,
and recently Assassin's Creed games.
I'm
worried about the fact that Assassin's Creed 4 is a year out from Assassin's Creed 3.
They've released one of those every November since Assassin's Creed 2. It's just an annualized series at this point.
But I think even, like, you know, thinking about, like, Borderlands 2, not that the series itself is wearing itself thin. Like, I have no interest in any of the DLC for it. Like, I finished the game. It was fine. Everything felt wrapped up for me. I don't know. Like, I have no drive to go back and pick up any of the additional story stuff, and, you know, and they're talking about doing a season 2 and stuff now. Like, I know it's only, you know, it's only for the, like, the core fans and stuff, but I think even the DLC things can wear a game thin and a franchise thin, and it might weaken how well a sequel will do, right? You know, you're extending the life of one, but maybe you're shortening the ability to bring another one when you do announce it.
That's what I'm wondering right now about Borderlands 2, with the way that things have really taken a downturn for them in terms of people's reaction responses to how the DLC has been coming out for that game, and if, you know, it leads stale.
Yeah. Yeah, right. There's been some negativity, too, with, like, the level cap increase and all that stuff. You know, that could negatively affect a Borderlands 3.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's different. I mean, it's not. We haven't had something like that before, where the DLC does live that long, you know, a year and a half after a game's release. Because usually you're looking at 2.5 years, 3 years between releases. So,
So do you think a lot of this kind of, I'll almost say stagnation with games is because you have these studios that have put out these major franchises, and there's that everyone's waiting, holding their breath for the next gen console, and they have to have something that keeps them afloat until they can release their game for that next gen console?
I don't think the next gen has anything to do with them releasing more stuff now. If anything, if they were holding their breath for next gen, they'd be diverting resources to it and not wasting it on this gen. But the money is now. The install base is now, and that's why they're making games for now.
Yeah.
You don't make a lot of money when you making a launch game for a console. You get a lot of exposure, but that's not where you're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, because the install base is so small.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you even look at something like remember the crazy hype there was for GTA 4?
Yes.
And you look at, like, GTA 5 is coming, and I see zero people giving a shit.
Yeah.
Like, they every now and then they drip new assets out, and it's a bunch of people saying, yeah, I'd rather play the next Saints Row.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, maybe it's just... I think people are just tired with... Maybe people are tired with the marquee stuff for this gen. They really just want something new. And the indie stuff has been taken off real well.
Yeah.
Look at the Vita. The Vita is practically an indie game dumping ground at this point, because all of the AAA or traditional console devs have basically left it to die. But, Sony's pursuing people like mad, like all those indie developers that they've trotted up on stage for PS4. I bet a lot of those games also get Vita versions.
I think part of the reason too, or part of the disparity with everything, is like you look at what the news has been the past 6 months, and it's studio closures and publisher closures, and the market's a lot smaller on the big end.
Yeah.
So we're basically, if you think about it, I guess you can say Deep Silver's now a big player in the market, though I don't know what their next gen plans would be like. But you got EA, you got Activision, and Sega. I can't think of who else would.
Nintendo, but they just own their own platform for it.
Yeah, they're like a sidebar. They're not even involved with that.
No, they're doing their own thing, and they always have and always will.
Yeah. But so you're gonna have all the indies, right? You got the real small guys, and you got the real big guys, and you still have that middle ground that now almost doesn't even exist anymore. And you almost wonder if maybe all these people that have been laid off are going to start forming some new studios and try and fill that gap, or...
I would love the B-tier to be filled. I would love it.
I think the B-tier is now... is slowly becoming... I could be wrong, but I think the B-tier is slowly becoming the Kickstarter ground.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like,
yeah,
you get a lot of the guys that used... I used to work for this studio and it closed, but I have a passion project, and, if you give me $100,000, I'll make an indie game. And you have, there's like this almost the whole retro revival thing that
I was going to say,
Xbox you have Live all those... Arcade and everything brought around this gen. You're now having the golden age of PC gaming, resurgence coming around in the Kickstarter.
Projects that are getting like funded $1 million or meet their goal within 2 hours of opening because it's these retro PC games that people want to see come back.
Genres too, right? Like strategy games and like adventure games and puzzle games.
Like people want, like, if this generation, like almost every major series at some point is an FPS. Shooter after shooter after shooter after shooter. And, like, even stuff like Mass Effect. Mass Effect's a big damn RPG, but it's also a shooter. It's like third-person cover-based shooter, first-person shooter that, uses the Call of Duty, multiplayer progression. It's basically been, every AAA game. And even stuff like Uncharted is a cover-based third-person shooter with a perk-based multiplayer competitive mode. You know, even the new Tomb Raider did that. You know, it's a cover-based game. It's all, there's a template that everyone follows to just different, everything's basically just been homogenized. And you see, like, a lot of the B-tier stuff go away because they can't afford the marketing to compete with the big players, and the games very rarely sell extraordinarily well. And, you see things like Tomb Raider and Hitman each pushed like 3 million units each, and Square Enix is like, you know what, these games failed.
Yeah, that was amazing to hear them say.
And you look at it, and it's like, what room is there for a B tier in a landscape where a game has to sell
5 million, yeah.
5-6 million units when no one's buying games? And that's weird. I wouldn't say the indie game community is raking in the dough, but you had shit like Fez come out, and that was one of the highest profile games. You see Guacamelee is a big deal, and I see a lot of buzz about stuff like that. You're getting a lot of people, maybe this is just the crowds I run with, but you look at the stuff that's been announced for this year. You have like The Last of Us and other stuff like Remember Me and all the games that we've heard about, and everybody I know that I share a lot of taste with, like, they're like, give me Dark Souls 2. And
in other words, he just spends a lot of time talking with Locke and Andrew, so
everybody he knows.
No, but it's true though, like, people are looking forward to the games that are not the big, like, AAA things anymore. Like,
so Nick, or at least I thought you were trying to say something earlier about when we were talking about the genres and homogenizing stuff.
What I thought would be fun to speculate on would be what is going to be
the next big genre,
the next one that everything kind of tends to gravitate towards. Is it going to be MMO? Right? Is everything going to be made into some sort of MMO hybrid, or is it going to be
Everyone's chasing the League of Legends money right now.
Right, so, yeah, so is everything going to be turned into a MOBA? I don't know.
I think that it won't be so much a MOBA so much as the everyone this gen took Call of Duty 4's unlock system and put it in their game. Mm-hmm. Basically anything with a multiplayer mode lifted that once that came out. Everyone also took cover, and you look at what people get hooked on by the MOBA games, and there's the
skins and stuff,
the vast number of playstyles accommodated in within a single game, and the ability to Dota 2 has all of the crafted shit and the player skins, the announcer stuff. I think you're going to see a lot more lessons being taken from the free-to-play games than in the next gen. I feel like we're going to be taking an awful lot of microtransactions out in the games we play on the consoles next go around.
Hopefully, if the infrastructure is set up for that, right?
Yeah, because that's going to be a huge lesson learned, right, for a lot of these companies that. EA is easy to talk about just because, they've been gone through the news lately. But, I mean, you go back even in the past years for a lot of major releases, having the servers and everything set up, I mean, people not underestimating the fact that when that fan base hits, it's going to hit however many millions of people. And right. they're going to, that game has to be ready to go at launch. I don't know if it's going to be MMOs based necessarily, or even Dota, League of Legends based, but I think you're right about free to play. I think there's going to be a lot of push to have things online and playing with people, which can be good and can be rather a miserable experience as well.
Oh, wow.
As we talk about League of Legends. So we'll see what happens. I know for myself personally, I kind of feel like BioShock Infinite was the last big, huge game I was really looking forward to. And now I'm kind of like, well,
The Last of Us.
There's Deadly Premonition Director's Cut at the end of this month.
There I'm is really Deadly
looking,
Premonition.
I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, anything else, gentlemen?
Oh, no. Last Praise the sun. Thoughts.
There you go. We, of course, have apps on iPhone, Windows Phone 7, Android. Go pick them up. You can check out some cool, exciting web content on your smartphone that is smarter.
Your cell phone, telephone.
It is smarter than Andrew's computer. You can buy shirts still, or are they all gone now? Is there like two left?
We got rid of them.
No, there's still some. I know we sold a couple last month, but I can't tell you how many's left. It doesn't. Still, they don't give us a number.
Still got some on our Split Reason store. Still on sale for $10.
Special sale. Special E3 sale. E3 preparation sale.
And of course,
It looks like there's like maybe one small left of the Revolution shirt. We got a handful of the Coin-Op shirts and a bunch of the logo shirts, which is their old logo.
So
vintage.
Yeah, exactly. Retro.
Retro sale.
$10. Retro sale.
Pick it up now before the new one comes out, and you can say you were wearing it before it was cool. Yep. Leave feedback for us on iTunes. Of course, follow us on Twitter. We are at CoOptimus, all one word, at COOPTIMUS. And, of course, Vincent's special cheat code hotline.
Oh, I got so many cheat codes for you. I will tell you how to get all the Chozo statues in Guacamelee this week, and how to kill your friends and impale them on a spike in Battleblock Theater. That's this week's hotline.
All you need to do to get those exciting tips, call 646-926-6748. Again, 646-926-6748. And Locke Vincent has the hookup for you.
Standing by.
Totally. Gentlemen, nice. As always, it's been a pleasure. And until next time, Nick, Locke, Mike, myself, have a good week.
Polo power.